Welcome to the West Highland Way Race Podcasts. I'm John Kinnaston and this is episode 43. It's now Sunday the 2nd of June and it's 8:45 and in the evening, so in 3 weeks time the 2013 West Highland Way Race will be over. And folks will either be travelling home or out celebrating or sleeping or doing whatever at the end of the race. This week's podcast, I had a great interview just now with Thomas and Zilka. They just came over and we had a meal together and then we had interviewed both Thomas and Zilka. Find out a little bit about their experiences on the West Highland Way Race. And I hope that you'll find this podcast really helpful. Zilka did the race for the first time last year and Thomas has ran four times. First two times he DNF'd and then had two great runs, and there's probably more to come hopefully in the future as well. But it was great to meet with them and to get an idea, and they had lots of really good advice and practical stuff which I'm sure you'll find helpful as you get ready for the race in 3 weeks time. So basically this podcast is Thomas and Zilka. I think spoke for about an hour and 20 minutes altogether. So it's a good interview and I hope you enjoy it. Welcome to the latest West Highland Way Race podcast. And it's a great honor this evening to have Thomas and Zilka with us. And I've been wanting to interview particularly Zilka actually from last year's race, and so we're going to centre on that. But first of all, thanks for coming. And we're meeting on Sunday afternoon, it's about 5:30. Katrina's made a lovely curry for us to eat afterwards, as long as you behave yourselves you can have some food afterwards. And but let's start with just introducing yourselves. Maybe give us a little bit of a flavour of who you are, why you're in Scotland maybe, and how you got into running. So Zilka, do you want to start?
All right, well, thanks for inviting us into your studio. Looks all very professional. Yes, I'm Zilka, I'm Thomas' wife, and well, we've really been in Scotland for the past 15 years now. So I arrived first due to my job, and Thomas then came later. And well, really, running wise, he got me into running because I used to skate in Germany and wasn't really into running, and then slowly but surely I basically started it. And
We did a lot of hill running in Scotland.
That's true. And so basically how I got into the West Highland Way really is through Thomas again. We walked it for our honeymoon, so that was our first encounter really with the West Highland Way, and we walked it over 6 days. And it was fantastic. And we had said then, every 5 years for our anniversary, we'll have to walk it again. So little did I know that only 3 years later, I would spend most of my year on the West Highland Way as he started to train for his first West Highland Way run. And well, as we all know, he had two DNFs. So that was a very difficult time. And after the second DNF, I actually said to him, I don't think I can do that again. I can't go through another year of training on the West Highland Way and having everything centered around it. But of course, I did support him for his third attempt. And luckily, really, he finished, because when I realized before the third time that he had problems, I think there was an injury or something wasn't quite going to plan. And I had said, well, if you have to pull out, I might as well do it and get you that goblet. So I think that was my first sort of thought of, you know, getting it out of the way and getting that first goblet into our house. But I really didn't think about it that seriously. And then after his fourth run, we all met up 4 weeks after, I think. And Katrina was there, and Nancy, who has helped me support Thomas for the four times that he did it. And they said, oh, we've got a plan for you for next year. We are going to be your support team and you'll have to enter. And I said, oh, you know, hang on a minute. I haven't even thought about that. So I basically had my support crew ready before I even, you know, seriously thought of entering. And I did. And it really was more about thinking, well, I just wonder if I could do it myself. And that really just grew on me over the years that I supported Thomas. And I just thought, well, you know, I saw other people finishing. I mean, I knew I wouldn't be up there at the front, I would be at the back, and I thought, well, I just wonder if I can do it. And that was really my sort of, thinking about it.
Excellent. Well, we'll find out a bit more about how it went. Mm-hmm. And but Thomas, maybe you can just give us your perspective. Just that, on that first time you walked it on your honeymoon, was that, had you ever heard of the race at that point?
No.
So you'd never heard of ultra running?
It was 2005, wasn't it?
Yes, 2005.
Oh, our honeymoon.
I think we went to one B&B and somebody talked about it when we were having breakfast. I think they said, oh, there is even a race here. And we thought, God, no, we can't do it.
No, I mean, I heard about the race pretty late. The thing is, I got the idea to do it. There was Highland Way maybe in 2 days because I talked about the West Highland Way with a colleague, and he said, you know what? And he was kind of an endurance guy, I think. And he said, I think we can do this in 2 days. Mm. And I was like, yeah, let's plan this and maybe do this in 2 days, you know. So it's a super challenge. And we heard about the Caledonian Challenge as well, going the other way, not the entire way, but we thought, oh, that could also be an interesting thing. But the fact that there wasn't actually an actual race and people were actually running this in one go, it took really a while to understand that this was actually possible. And at the time, in 2005, 2006, before we actually heard about the race, I would have thought, no, that's just not possible. You can't run the entire way. And I do remember, though, because we were driving up the A82 a lot. Once, actually, we were driving up there on race day of the West Highland race. And Circus told me, the race is today, I think. It was 2 years maybe before I did it. It was in 2007,
I think.
There was actually, I saw a guy after Tyndrum on the right-hend side towards Ben Doryan on the path running. And I thought, how can someone still be running after 53 miles at that stage, 53 miles, which is just impossible. And then we drove to the King's House Hotel. Again, it was Circus suggested, oh, let's go to the King's House Hotel and have a look. Maybe there's something going on there. And actually, there was Dario. He was standing there and he said, oh, something is incredible is happening, because I think the leader just came in and he's chased by a woman. And that was Lucy Colhoun. She was just minutes behind Adrian Davis coming to the checkpoint. And Adrian Davis left the checkpoint and he was storming. And I just could not believe how fast these guys were running still after, like, there was 100K. Yeah. So it was pretty exciting.
If you'd have waited a few hours, you could have seen me. I'd have been running through.
Was that it?
That was 07 was my first race.
Right?
Yeah. Yes. Oh, yeah, of course. I didn't know about
you. Didn't know who I was.
I mean, but then we found the website and the West Highland Race Forum, which was great.
Yeah.
And I was just, every other day I was on the website and reading.
Yeah. Well, I remember that was probably the first time I met you, was 08 when we were then starting to plan for that for your first race, and we did a number of train runs together.
Yeah.
Well,
oh, yes. Uh-huh.
We started together, and then you and Marco disappeared off into the distance, and then we met at the end.
Yeah.
But maybe tell us a little bit about those first two races, because I think most of the people who know you, Thomas, know that you had a real battle over those first two races. So maybe just give us a little flavour of what happened.
I don't know. I mean, I trained really hard for those races and I was totally obsessed. For my first race, I was doing spreadsheets, reading blogs. I had printed out all the race tales. I read them through the whole pile, from Fiona Rennie, Tim Downey's, your race reports, David Waterman's, everyone's race days I could find. I read from the start to finish, and I prepared, I think, hard and focused, and I think I overtrained probably. I mean, but on race day, I started, and everyone else was running away from me. I mean, it was not probably going as planned, and I was in probably a terrible shape.
You did. I think the difficult thing was you didn't really let it show. I mean, obviously we didn't know what to expect, Nancy and I. You know, you had trained and you didn't have an injury as such, and you were going maybe not as fast as you thought you could, but you were still up there at the sort of maybe first third. And then I remember waiting at King's House for you, and we had just set up because at that point there was a checkpoint there, and then getting a phone call from Thomas that I can't come off the runoff war on my own, my legs, I can't control my legs, you know. And then that was like a shock because we hadn't sort of really noticed before that maybe something wasn't right, quite going to plan. And so I had to go up and get you, and basically, yeah, you know, he couldn't continue. But I think he didn't really let it show before that maybe things weren't quite going to
plan.
Yeah, but you didn't know what to expect yourself.
I thought some people said, okay, you start, you feel sluggish at the start, but that will all come and you...
Mm.
But the thing is, I felt sluggish at the start.
Yeah.
It was getting worse and worse and worse. And everything started hurting. And then, of course, people said, okay, you have low points at the beginning, which is actually true, because I had other races where I felt bad at the start. And later I felt great. But on that day, it just getting worse and worse. And it was so hard. And there were runners walking, and they were walking faster than I was running. And it was horrible. It was just not working.
I remember talking to you as well, because I think that week before you hardly slept, did you?
Mm,
I remember
no.
you saying
no,
that you were really, you know, you're not normally like that, are
no,
you? And
no.
yet you sort of had, you were so keyed up for the race. And I think mentally, I think you were in the right place in a sense because of that tiredness to start with.
Physically and mentally, I also remember I had this plan that I had to eat as much as possible.
That's right, oh dear.
And I had one of our friends was there, and he had to force me to eat and eat and eat, even if I wasn't hungry anymore.
On the race.
Before the race, it was
madness.
Yeah.
I wouldn't do anything like it ever again.
Okay, so that first race
anyway,
didn't go quite so well.
It didn't get well. The second race didn't go quite well as well, but I think I was injured.
You were injured, yeah.
And
yeah.
I wasn't really ready for the race,
no,
but I did start the race, and I thought, okay, I go to Tynrum. So we are kind of part of the race until Tynrum. That was kind of my mental plan, and I managed it to Tynrum, and of course you're kind of pushed, okay, you can do another section, you can go to Bridge of Orkney, or you can go to King's House, and then we get you to the finish.
Yeah.
But I just disintegrated over the runoff.
Oh, yes, again. Because
my walking pace was so slow, we were
so
passed
slow.
By
yeah, no,
walkers, which were just strolling.
Yeah,
and
I mean, I was allowed to walk with you then, because you were obviously further into the field by then, and...
My
but
body,
it
was
so
kind of
so
warm,
so
but my body temperature dropped.
Yeah, he was free. It was a warm day, I think, that year.
So
and he had everything on that. We had a fleece, and it was during the day, the sun
fleece,
was out.
Jacket, another layer,
was
and I was shivering,
yeah.
And it was warm. So
good.
I was just, my energy was just disintegrating. So eventually, I was allowed to stop.
Yes.
And you stopped at the same place as
the... No, I got a bit further.
Oh, did you?
To the King's House Hotel.
I managed the King's
yeah.
House Hotel, but... so that was my second one. Didn't work.
Okay, but then 2010, you finished in 18 hours, 49, 42.
Yes, it was.
But again, that was at a good time, but you had some battles then as well, didn't you?
Yes, that was the shin injury I had in training before. I think I just stumbled over a rock and had this sharp pain in my shin. And on race day, and I kind of rested for 2 weeks and 2.5 weeks. And on race day, after on the descents after Rodenen towards Inversnaid, on one of those steeper, longer descents, all of a sudden the pain was back, and I thought that's it, and I can't do it, but. My energy was fine, and I was in good shape, and so what I did, I just continued, and the pain just, it was manageable. So, and because I was running a bit slower than I probably would have, I had a quite a good finish. Yeah. So that all failed together, and it was just a miracle. It was wonderful. Really,
Marco in his interview was saying that last section you two were sort of battling each other, and then you almost had a sprint finish, didn't you, over the last 2-3 miles?
Oh, yeah.
Yes. I mean, I thought I was chased by Kate Jenkins, but I think she struggled a bit, so I kind of had quite a good distance from her. But when I ran towards Marco, he turned back, saw me, and he put on such a fast stride. It was ridiculous. I mean, it was like 6 minute mile pace. I think I would guess certainly faster than 7 minute mile pace, and he just ran away from me. But I was so happy that I finished.
Yeah.
I was so over the moon. I was no way.
Yeah.
Like,
I remember the prize giving that day when you got your award.
Oh,
the whole place just erupted.
Yeah. I know. Yeah.
It was great.
Tim Downey gave me a hug. He almost broke my neck. I remember this.
I mean, you were so fast that we actually missed him in Lundavra. I mean, when he left Kinlochleven, Nancy and I thought, oh, this is going to be the year, you know, he is going to finish, you know, only an accident, you know, can get in the way. And and we were so ecstatic that we stopped at the co-op there to buy some sparkling wine. And we did arrive on time, the times that he had given us, but he was so far ahead of his schedule that we arrived and somebody said, are you waiting for such and such? Said yes. No, he has long gone, and I didn't believe him. So I made Nancy go up again and ask, give us a description. And he said, no, he is through. He's told us to tell you to just, you know, go. He's feeling fine, and off he went. So we then had to sprint and really get.
And you made it
back
to the finish.
To the finish in time.
I mean, I was just more worried not seeing them, because I thought, you know, it could have been an accident.
Yeah.
It was nasty A82, and it was like, oh. So it wasn't, you know. So
so there's a good lesson for support team.
Yes.
Even though Thomas
don't celebrate
gave, yeah, well, also Thomas gave you very clear splits, but he was actually running better.
Yes.
You know, almost ahead of them. So you have to be careful.
Okay.
Then you came back in 2011, and you finished in 17:54.47. So was that obviously that was an hour off, almost an hour off that previous year. So things must have gone a lot better.
Yeah. Well, I wasn't injured in that race. I wasn't really handicapped at all. I just had problems with my shoes. So in the first half, I was really struggling. I was slipping in the shoe. I mean, just the lessons learned. You know, you need to take care of. You need to find out what kind of shoe you can wear.
Did you wear road shoes that year?
I was wearing road shoes, but I was slipping inside the shoe all the time, the first half certainly, so I spent a lot of time just changing shoes and moaning and everything. But it was from Tyndrum the rest of the race, all of a sudden, the weather got better, I think a bit better. And because I was a bit slower in the first half, relatively slow, I had a fantastic second half.
Yeah.
Another lesson, you know, maybe. But it just certainly was. I was even feeling a bit depressed in the first half. I don't know. It didn't work well in the first half at all. So up to Tyndrum, it was like, and you know, Silke was. She gave me a hard time afterwards about me not being very polite. But it was just, I was just unhappy. And I remember at Tyndrum, I thought, let's just pull out.
Yeah, because you saw Marco,
Marco had
to
pull out.
And said, I might just stop as well. I'm like, what? No way.
And I did have my first coffee, though, at Tyndrum. And all of a sudden, I had my first coffee, and that was just, all of a sudden.
Had you gone without coffee for a few weeks before?
No, but I withdrew the coffee, I mean, the day before.
Yeah.
And I didn't have any coffee before the race or during the race. I drink a lot of coffee usually,
okay.
So I need my coffee. And
so maybe you had withdrawal symptoms from the first half.
Possibly.
Yes.
I mean,
and it's a night time as well, so the biorhythm is a bit weird and messed up. So, but just the second half just went great, and I had again a very fast last section, which is just wonderful.
Yeah.
So
it's always
a
good
wonderful
to
experience.
It's good to finish strong, isn't it?
Yeah.
Good. Okay. Well, I know we could talk for ages, and maybe we'll get you back as a separate podcast to find out a bit about your other running as well.
Mm-hmm.
because you've had some great results on the West Highland Way, not just the full race, but the Devil's Race and other races. But as I said, I did want to concentrate tonight on Zilke, because I think for a lot of people, the way you prepared last year and the way you accomplished what you set out to do, I think there's a lot to learn there. So you've told us a little bit about sort of getting into the race and in the end trying to get the goblet for the family as much as anything. But can you tell us how you prepared? Once that 4 weeks after the race, when you told the group that you were going to do it, or you were sort of talked into doing
yes.
it, from that point onwards, how did you prepare over that next 11 months? In the sense of, did you have a training plan? What was your aim? I know you're a busy doctor, and you're trying to fit in the sort of times to train. So can you give us a little bit of a feel about that 11 months and how you planned and how you prepared?
Well, I guess obviously, I was lucky to have Thomas there to give me a lot of advice. I mean, we'll probably come to that, but the last few weeks before the race and so on, I mean, he was obviously there to give me very good advice. So we did draft a sort of training plan, really looking at when I could do a long run. I think it started really November, long run on the West Highland Way, and then just slowly building up the weekly mileage, because I don't usually have a very high sort of mileage. So November, I think, was the first long run on the West Highland Way. Then I did the Marcoton, and that obviously gave me quite a few miles. And then from January, really, with the West Highland Way training. Was there already a training weekend?
Yes, it was, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was the first one, actually. Yeah. So with that weekend, that was sort of really the start of the serious training, and we had a sort of rough idea of when my high mileage weeks could be, and we had people coming and visitors, so we had to sort of build it all around that. But Thomas was also really trying to stress from the beginning that I shouldn't really take that in stone, that it all depends, how I would feel after each long training run, and to really adjust the miles during the week, and not to freak out if maybe I couldn't do one of the long runs or I had to shorten it. So in that respect, he really sort of kept me calm, and when things didn't go to plan, really just said, well, don't worry, just do a bit here or do this next week. So really, I think he was in overall charge, really, I think, of the training plan. But obviously I had to go out and do the long runs, and my main long runs really were a Thursday when I was off, and obviously a Saturday or Sunday, and it was all about back-to-back runs, really. And the longest run was 30 miles, so I didn't really do any other long runs apart from the Fling, which I obviously used as a training run. But Thursday, Saturday or Sunday sort of long runs, and my peak mileage was actually in February, I think, when we went to Gran Canaria. I had about 70 miles, I think, and then doing the
with
rest
a lot of climbing
with a lot yeah a lot of climbing, and then the rest of the peak weeks were maybe 50 miles, 55 miles at most. And I had the Fling, I had a week on Skye where I did a lot of hill walking, and it was really the sort of walking up and down and training the quads, I think, that helped a lot. And then 4-5 weeks before the race, I did the West Island run on Butte, which gave me 30 miles. And then that was actually a bit harder than expected on the ankles. So again, the training plan got altered a bit. And I had week 4 and 3 before the race, I had another 55-mile week each. And that was really sort of all the peak training done, and just really from then on, I think easing off from two weeks before the race. Really.
Did you do any speed work during that 6 months?
No, not at all. But I don't usually do speed work, so really, I'm not a fast runner anyway. I didn't train. Though saying that, actually, I did maybe do a few efforts. I mean, that was one thing. When I did maybe a shorter run to do maybe a 1K effort, and generally I felt fit. And I remember on my last run, which was a Tuesday before the race, which was only 2 or 3 miles, an easy run, but I did do a few strides, And I felt so fit and good that I said to Thomas, I think I could run a 10K PB. You know, I just felt everything was going, and he was really pleased, you know, that I sort of felt that fit in general. But
so the taper was
paying off and it was working. But no, I didn't, but I don't usually do speed jog anyway, so.
Yeah. And from your perspective, Thomas, how did you feel, Zilka, prepared during that 6-7 months? And
I mean, I think it was far earlier than when she decided that she wanted to do the West Highland Rally, when I said, you can actually do this, because she's a very fast walker, and she is very enduring. So whenever we had long hill walks before, years and years before, she was always, she wasn't tiring, and it was me actually getting tired from walking first, and she has a very fast walking stride.
It's the long legs.
Long legs. Her parents are in their 70s, and I can barely keep up with them when we go for a walk.
Right.
So there, she's a very fast walker.
Yeah.
And she had actually her own race plan, because she asked me quite early. She asked me, Thomas, what happens when I start walking from Bridge of Walkey onwards?
Mm-hmm.
Can I still make the cutoffs? I said, oh yes, you can, if you walk fast, if you keep on walking really fast, yes, you can. And that's, I think that's what her plan was, and then actually that worked.
Mm,
and
that's true, yeah.
So she maintained very, very high. I don't want to spoil.
Okay, well, let's come on to
story,
that. I think, obviously, Katrina was on your backup team, support team. So I was getting a little bit of information. So I think the meeting that you had was very detailed and was good. And I was really impressed with the way you both went about your in preparation, not just the training, because that's obviously a real important part of it, but it's also just getting all the little details right. And I think, can you tell us a little bit about how you plan your nutrition, what pace you were going to run at, what your plans for checkpoints were, what your plans for looking after your feet, those sort of things. So just maybe both of you give us a little bit of an insight into that.
I think, again, you know, I was lucky to have Thomas, because when it was clear that he wasn't going to run the West Highland Way due to the Anglo-Celtic plate 4 weeks later, he, I think, poured every sort of focus and energy he had into really preparing my race, and he designed spreadsheets and details that I wouldn't even have, I think, bothered or, you know, even could have provided. So he looked at all my training runs on the route, my fling times. He compared, especially Fiona Rennie's time, and because my times for the fling were similar, even though I was a bit slower, but sort of we thought we could use that, you know, as a guide. And so he looked at all that, and he worked out from there on, picked out the bits from one meeting point to the next, you know, from the Garmin times, from the training runs, and he made up a plan sort of when I could be expected at the earliest and what would be a late time. And obviously for me, one thing was to make the cutoff, so really just giving an idea of what times I needed to run to get there. And he then looked at, you know, the distance I had in between meeting my crew, and worked out exactly how much fluid I might need. So really one thing that's, I think, quite important, because I mean, there's no point carrying a liter of fluid with you if when you're meeting your crew, and really all you could drink would be maybe half of that. So he had worked all that out, which I think when you look at the whole distance of 95 miles or 30 hours on your feet, actually makes a difference. You know, if you carry 1 or 2 pounds more than you need over that distance, it might just, you know, zap a bit more of energy out of you than is actually necessary. So he had made a really detailed plan and told.
But I think that's really important, because
the
times I see runners running with far more stuff than they need. You know, they're going to meet their support in an hour's time.
Yeah. So how can you drink a litre?
That's
don't
right. They've got
it, you know?
2 litres of water in their in their camelback or so.
And
exactly.
And that's what he worked on. I think I wouldn't have probably gone into those details. But I mean, if you look at the plan, I mean, I was working with two of the Nathan backpacks. So I wouldn't lose too much time, you know, getting them refilled and stuff. They were ready filled with whatever I needed for the next step. So he actually told them to bring a measuring jug, I think, which they found quite amusing. But but really to fill up, let's say, 400 mils because I would see them again in 45 minutes, or or you know, 600 mils for a longer sort of.
So you had two packs.
I had two packs.
So you could just swap them over.
Yes, all I mean, everything.
One regarding the drinking. One of my, it wasn't just the aspect of carrying extra weight, which of course, you know, you have to travel as or run as light as possible, but also the overhydration, because I have been drinking too much all year, all the years I've been running.
So you felt if Silke had too much water, she might be tempted to drink too much.
Exactly. Yeah. So we kind of limit, I limited that to like down to 400 milliliters per hour, which I think is absolutely sufficient. However, when she started feeling thirsty, then of course she could have more.
Yeah.
That was absolutely no question. Yeah. But just both the weight she had to carry was minimized, and also just the temptation of drinking too much. Yes.
Okay, what about the food side? What was the plan for that?
The food side, again, you know, Thomas had said, even during the training runs, had told me to try and eat something every 30 minutes. So actually I've got an alarm on my Garmin that reminds me to do that. So we had worked out a few things I could eat, from obviously jelly babies to brioches. I had a sort of pastry or a cheese sandwich. So I had a limited choice of things I knew I could eat. Gels, I was using gels as well in between, but also always using sort of something more solid. So every 30 minutes, you know, I had my reminder, and I would religiously eat something, even if it was just four jelly babies, or three or four would be one portion. And or even have a gel if I didn't feel like eating anything. So that worked really well. And then at the meeting point with my crew, he had told them obviously to offer me sort of two portions of something and make sure that I would actually take them.
And presumably you
pick one.
You practice those in your training runs.
Everything was sort of practiced. I actually, funnily enough, on race day, I couldn't even stomach the sandwich. I mean, the first bite I took out of it, I thought, God, you know, what is this? I can't eat it. So I just stuck to the other stuff. But yeah, even though I had used it in training runs before, And I had everything was identical in those two bags, including the space, you know, the rescue blanket and so on. So all we swapped
compulsory
kit was identical. All I swapped was my mobile phone, really, and that was all.
Remember, Katrina was saying as well that you drank a lot of soup, didn't you?
Oh well, that was due to the weather. I mean, that is something from the start, and I actually think that is part of why it went very well. From Balmaha, I just started to drink hot tea and hot soup, and just got a lot of hot.
You think if the weather conditions had been different, you mightn't have had as much hot food? Or
no, that's right. No, I wouldn't. I don't think I would have. I would have maybe had more of a cold drink. But really, I think that sort of hot tea when I met them, and soup from very early on, actually. I think from Hovarden, and I started to eat these noodle pots and soup, and we actually ran out. By Kinloch-Leven we had run out because I had a lot of spare ones. But because of the weather, I had just used it all up. And
so even though you had quite a detailed plan, you also had you were flexible enough because of the conditions to change.
Yeah, we thought about choices, and food was one of our planned go-to item in case you needed it. Because we had bought hot water, for example. I insisted of carrying hot water from the start.
Mm.
Well, you actually said, oh, we can get this from, you know, we can go to Thailand, to the Green Valley and get hot water there. And I said, no, let's take hot water so we can quickly get you soup if you need it, because soup, it can do magic.
Yes, and that was, I think, for me, the soup, and that was just something that carried me through because it was such a difficult day.
So
then you talked about your the checkpoints having these two bags, so you didn't waste much time. Did you have a sort of a plan for the checkpoints? Were you hoping to get in and out within minutes, or were you going to sit down? What was the plan?
Well, the plan really was not to sit down and just, you know, swap the bags and walk along. And I mean, if you look at the sort of spreadsheet that Thomas had made, he actually told them walk with her, you know, walk with Silke and ask her what she needs and give her that. So the plan was really not to stop, but due to the weather, I think from Balmaha on, I changed my shoes and socks often, which I think was a bit of a waste of time because that they just got wet straight away. But I did use Dramac socks. Thomas had sourced them actually at that time from America because nobody knew about them here. So we had actually a pair each, and I had them on, but I hadn't read the instructions, so I had put on Vaseline. So from Balmaha onwards, I actually took my socks off, put more Vaseline on, you know, put the Dramac socks back on, changed into the spare pair that we had. But I think all that was a bit wasted, because obviously if I had read the instructions correctly, I could have just, you know, left it and run through. So a lot of sitting down time was due to the feet and trying to maybe prevent terrible blisters. And then also, I think I must have lost at least an hour and a half due to complete change of clothes in Roverdenen and in Ochtertyre.
It took half an hour just for you to change.
But really totally. But I think also it was necessary on the day. So, you know, if...
But that was fine.
If I hadn't done it, you know, I would
have... We agreed you have to take care of yourself.
So
because you were still well in time.
Yeah.
So
the amount of people who did have to DNF last year because they didn't look after their, you know,
needs. She was in a very good spirit still, there was no reason for her to force her into something.
I think the amount of people I met just before Ben Glass who were so cold and shivering, you know, that was really quite frightening. And I put my full waterproofs on in Roverdenen, including my pairs of, you know, the trousers, and by Ochtertyre, I still needed a total change of clothes. So yeah, as I said, I did stop for longer than planned, but that was really due to the weather.
Just before we actually talk about the race itself, I know we've touched on it there. Thomas, what, from your perspective, obviously Zilke's relied on you heavily there, and you put all your effort in to support him. Any comments that you'd like to add on the way that you helped Zilke prepare, and what were the key things that you wanted for her?
I mean, Zilke is a bit more restricted regarding time for training, so she needed more rely on certain days and also on a training plan than I would, because I just go up, I finish my work and I go for a run, you know. So, but Zilke, she had worked longer days than I do. So she was a bit more depending on having a training plan. But she had the first days and the weekends, most of the weekends, for a run. So what I tried to help her to understand how training actually works, so how she responds to training.
Mm.
So not just today you do 20 miles and tomorrow you do 15. I would tell her, do 20 miles today and see how you feel tomorrow. Because I just wanted to avoid overtraining. And I was just observing, you know, how she felt. But I had confidence in her endurance, because I just knew this from our long hill walks, that she would have a good chance to finish, and in particular have a very decent finish, the last sections, if she kept this going. Even if she would walk, she would walk fast. So the confidence, I was very confident that she would do this. The split times again, she was kind of, she had Fiona Rennie as her, imaged her. She said, I think Fiona, I can probably.
So what sort of time was that?
Her split times.
Well, she had obviously a very fast one year, which was it 26?
Yeah.
That wasn't the time. No, I think around 30 hours, 29, 30. That was sort of, if everything went well, I knew that would be a great time for
and
me.
And she read you.
I read all
her blogs.
And I ran with her, actually. We did the West Island
yeah.
run today together on Bude. And so I had spoken to her. And during the fling, I met her. When she was running with Sue, so we had chatted a lot, and
even the food, some of the food had to be exactly what Fiona was eating, and some of the splits had to be exactly like hers. So she kind of gave me the direction I was, and so the split times I was calculating for her, again, which I always say are only for the support team, not for the runner. I wouldn't tell her, slow down and speed up, because she would really take care of that herself. But I kind of predicted the split times quite correctly, so we were pretty close, and that was again just for the support team to know where we would expect her.
Yeah.
Well, I'm already spoiling the But otherwise, no, she was, she had her own idea about the race herself.
I mean,
she pushed me in what I was doing for
so
her.
It was teamwork.
I was using you, yes.
Yeah.
She was using
my knowledge.
The good ideas, and I just got it.
Yeah.
But to plan a race with two support teams, that was really hard work, I think.
Yeah,
that
was necessary.
I could help her there.
Yeah.
To get this, and that
was a key part, wasn't
it, really,
to have two teams.
Oh yes, definitely. I knew I would be out there for two nights, so
yeah.
There was no question. And obviously, I was lucky to have both Katrine and Nancy, who are very experienced, and had them for the first half, and then two friends from the running club, you know, who would do the second part, and Thomas in the background from really that sort of. After the first night, he would be there to coordinate all that. So I knew that, you know, couldn't be any better. So yeah, that was good. Mm.
Okay, so let's think about race day then.
Yes.
That's that Friday night when you arrived at Mulgai.
God, I was so scared.
How did you feel? Were you?
I think in the car even, like, oh my God, I can't believe, you know, this is it. And I nearly didn't want to get out of the car. I think I was so scared. I mean, before you know it, basically it starts, and I had, because the weather outlook was so bad, I had decided to actually take Thomas' jacket, the one that had has a hood, because I have a Gore-Tex running jacket that doesn't have a hood, and again, I think that was important, you know, having a running jacket with a hood, because that really keeps you dry as well. And I knew from the start, I knew where I wanted to walk, and even in the Mugdog Country Park, there were very small inclines, but I knew I was going to walk them right from the start, and I was left behind fairly quickly, and I think I must have been last, I think, and it was so, the rain was pouring down, it was so dark, but I wasn't afraid, I was just, you know, walking up the little inclines, thinking, oh well, there you go, you're last, and then, yeah, from the start, I just kept that going, and I didn't sort of let myself be pulled with the rest of them, who obviously were still running those inclines at the time, and I just knew what I wanted to do, and I stuck to that, even if it meant I was just going to be on my own from the start. So, and I actually was quite eerie, really, but I wasn't afraid or anything. It was just, you know, quite dark, and the rain was pouring into my face, and I just
It takes a lot of mental strength, that, actually. You know, because it's easy to get sucked along, isn't it? Whatever pace you're running at, and end up running just, even if you're running 15, 20 seconds per mile faster than you want to, that adds up, doesn't it? And I think, again, I think the seeds of a good race for you were right from the start, that you were able to be disciplined enough to run at your own pace.
I think it's a different story for a guy. We guys tend to run faster, but Silke, that was her plan. She said, "I'm going to be last."
No, I mean, it wasn't my plan to be last. My plan was to walk right from the start, any little incline, and I knew I would that would make me last.
I don't think she didn't. I mean, of course, she's very disciplined, but she wasn't. The temptation for her to go fast
wasn't. No, it wasn't.
Really,
I wasn't.
I mean, for me, it is.
Yeah.
For you, it probably is as well.
Yeah.
But for her, no, it wasn't.
No.
So it was, she had her plan to go slow from the start and preserve energy. So she had.
And actually, that was, like, Andreas, one of our friends, is doing it for the first time this year. He did the fling, and he got together with a girl that he kept running with, and ran more than you. And I did say to him last week, actually, I said, well, just make sure you don't team up with anyone in the West Highland Way race, because it's not a race to team up with somebody and try to run their pace or you know, slow down for them, because you need to just go your own pace, and unless you plan to run, you know, somebody, and that was the plan, to go together. But otherwise, I think you just go, and if that leaves you on your own, well, fair enough, you know, you're on your own, but you know, that's what it is about. So yeah, I think that helped me as well.
Yeah. Now, as we know, those who were involved last year know that the weather was awful for the first
pretty well rain for the first 14 hours.
Yeah, 14 hours.
So how did you cope with that? You've talked a little bit about having the right gear.
Yes.
I know one of the hard things last year was there was no support at Ben Glass,
yes.
was there?
No.
So that you left your team at Rawadena and
uh-huh.
you weren't going to see him again till Auch the Tir.
Yeah.
So how did you cope with that 30 miles on your own?
Well, I mean, I knew obviously that was going to happen, so I was prepared for it. And part of it was in Rawadena to really, again, have a change and put my rain gear on, even the trousers. And I did come across a lot of runners who just were still running in their shorts. And obviously, after so many miles, you do get cold and it just, you know, you get soaked. So I think that was one part, you know, looking. And also I took gloves. So Thomas laughed at me. He said, "You're not needing gloves, it's not that cold." You know, I said, "Well, I'm going to take my gloves." And I actually had them on. You know, obviously they got soaked, but they did help to keep me warm. And so I knew, yeah, just really kept, obviously at that time still was running, you know, when I could on the flats and on the downhills. Had my hot drinks and soup and just had my drop bags in. Inversnaid and Ben Glass, and just really things that obviously come into your head then that keep you going. And two things actually that were really quite sweet. Thomas had prepared my drop bags again, you know, he had done that, and he had left little messages in the drop bags, so that was quite sweet.
Do you want to share some of those?
I can't actually remember them even, but yeah, at the time, you know, that was really quite sweet. So yeah, that spurred me on to the next point, and then I met, you know, Caroline on the reef between Inversnaid and Ben Glass. So we stuck together a bit until we got to Darius Point. Again, that was a sort of milestone as well. So looking back, you know, just having a minute, and then going to Ben Glass, I overtook a few people who were struggling, really with the cold. Then I arrived at Ben Glass and got my drop bag and saw Rob, Marco's friend, who had to pull out later. He was one of those who were really shivering and so cold. So, and I was realizing that actually I wasn't feeling cold, though I, you know, it was wet. I wasn't cold at all. I think I don't know. I preserved, you know, my heat quite well, and I just focused on the next point. And the next point then was meeting Thomas up at Boger Glen after the gate, you know, where the first support was allowed, and that was my focus. So really, for me, it was just really focusing on the next meeting point or the next drop back, and I just thought, well, I'll meet him. I want, you know, to show him I'm doing okay, and you know, he was there with all the hot tea again, and so. And then I thought, well, I'll see the next in Auch the Tir. I'll see my new support crew. So it was just always in my head to just prepare for the next meeting point, for the next sort of checkpoint, and just concentrate on that. And I remember from early on, when I left, I think it was in Magdok Park, and came to what was Garabantan Forest, for a minute or so the rain stopped and the birds started to sing, and I'm like, oh my God, well then obviously it started again. And I just kept saying to myself, it is now or never, I'm not going through that training again. And I thought, well, this is it, you know, it's now or never. So that, I think, was my mantra. It just, you know, kept me going, and obviously I, you know, had a fantastic support. They just, you know, got me through the points and checkpoints, and just, you know, had everything ready, and sent me on my way until the next meeting point. So it was just really all focused from one meeting to the next, and on to the next checkpoint, and trying to avoid the cutoff. So it was all.
But you were well ahead of the cutoffs, weren't you?
Well, I think I arrived in Auch the Tir after 14 hours, and then due to my changeover that took about half an hour, I was sort of obviously late getting out. But yes, no, I was about an hour maybe ahead of the cutoffs.
And then from then onwards, they actually get very generous, don't they?
Yeah, no.
You know, in the sense it's they give you more and more time. So.
Yeah. I mean, then I think from then onwards, yeah, I was fine, because but at that point I was starting to overtake people. I mean, I was sort of really on the way from Tyndrum to Ben Glass. I passed quite a few people that were walking. I was still running a little bit then, but yeah, there were people then. You know,
and again,
that
did that help
overtook.
You? Just sort
again,
of
yes,
motivation wise?
Yes, just really, you know, chatting a few, you know, minutes, and then just going on going on, and I knew, and that's what Thomas said at the beginning, I can walk fast, and that's what I did, and
yeah.
I think just really kept walking at a fast pace. And when Yvonne, my support runner, joined me at Bridge of Orkney, I think she had to jog next to me, you know, and I was still walking. So yeah, so that's
yeah.
I think what I did at the second half. And
during that sort of middle section, was there any a time where, you know, you still had 35 miles to go, 40 miles to go, whatever? Was there any a time that you were thinking, oh, I'm not going to do this? Or did that never
no,
enter your mind?
Never. Because obviously I was feeling okay, you know,
yeah.
there was no injury that could have maybe made it difficult. I was going well. The rain actually didn't even, you know, disturb me that much. I think it was just what was happening on the day, that was it. You
yeah.
know, you had to just keep going. And when I think about the race now, I don't even remember the rain. I mean, it's completely gone out of my memory.
She's really waterproof in bed. She's doing really well in bad weather.
Yeah.
For example, when we did this Gran Canaria marathon just at the beginning of the year this year, the weather was just horrible. But she felt really comfortable and enjoying the race. Other people were just falling and slipping and
this
is so miserable. And she's good in bad weather. I think Katrina is as well. She doesn't suffer. I mean, if it starts getting wet and cold, I start to suffer and my performance drops and I'm rubbish and get grumpy. But no, Silke, she was.
Yeah, so as I said, I have totally, that's not
even in my memory. Despite that horrible weather.
Yeah.
So tell us a bit about the last 14 miles. You got to Kinlochleven.
Yes, oh God, that was a shock. Yes, because the walk over the Devil's Staircase, it was obviously at night, I don't know, was it 2 o'clock or something. There were a few people around us because by then, actually I had run a bit with Fiona, but then she set off up the Devil's Staircase on her own, but we had caught up with a few other people. And Thomas was accompanying me then. That was the only part he walked with me by then. And then we were chatting. It was kind of romantic. I mean, it was a nice night and we were chatting away. It was
The
weather was calm. It was even warm.
And, I remember Thomas saying, oh, this is a romantic.
And she was
I'm in the middle of the race.
Yes.
But,
and even she was doing extremely well, so I was... The spirit was very, very good.
And it was just really, then we were coming down, there were two guys, actually one of them commented afterwards, and they had lost, I don't think they had lost their way, but they were nearly going off in the wrong direction near that sort of house at the top of the pipeline. And I said, oh, no, this way to the goblet. And he said afterwards, unfortunately, he had to stop in Kinlochleven, but... you know, that was, you know, all in my mind was, you know, this is the way to the goblet, you know, this is where you have to go. But then when we entered the village hall, suddenly, I mean, there was light, there were all those people, and there was a buzz about, I'm like, oh God, you know. And it just obviously had another, I think, change of clothes, or warmer clothes, I think I put on a few warmer clothes.
It spent quite some time there, but it was just
really
ready and comfortable
for the last section. And that was all that was. And it was Katrina then and Yvonne who accompanied me. And we set off, and it was obviously already getting light. And it was so great to see the rescue guy up there, Jeff, I think, with his dog. I mean, that was a really good experience. But then I think on the Larigmore I probably had my low point, because it just dragged on, and by then my feet were so sore, every step was like stepping into glass, and wasn't even blisters, I think it was just the trench foot. Because Nancy was caught, she had gone to the B&B in Fort William to sleep a bit, and they obviously called her back to Kinlochleven because Katrina was running with me from then on, and they said, oh, her feet are a mess, and she, as a nurse, she sort of got, you know, what's going to happen, and I took my socks off, and she just looked at me and said, nothing wrong with them, you know, just put your socks back on and go, you know, and they were sort of trench feet, but every step, I think you had the same, you know, in your Lakeland race, and everybody knows how rough the Larigmore is, you know, and every step. So I had to actually lean on them if I had a really big step down a rock. So that and that unfortunately stopped me from running. I think I could have still run if it wasn't for these sore feet. So the Larigmore, I knew we hadn't even reached the ruin, and I still had to ask, have we passed the ruin yet? And Katrina just said, I don't think so. I knew we hadn't, you know, so.
Well, I know Katrina, and she told me afterwards that she said, never once did you complain. Never once did you say, you know, whinge or throw the dummy out, whatever.
No.
But she said you went quiet.
Yes.
And
yes.
That was the time she knew that you were battling a bit.
Yes,
that you
yes.
Just,
I think
you went within yourself a bit.
Yeah, the Larrick Moor was just.
But the quietness kind of stopped on the last bit.
Oh, God, yes. I mean, the last bit, really.
I was doing that, right? And Katrina came, she was flying towards.
Yeah, she wanted to run.
She was just enjoying herself. No, everything is fine. And actually, I wanted to run the last section with her, but all the women, they all wanted to go with Silke to do the last, that section from Lundavra.
So you had to drive the car.
So I had to drive the car, but I was happy because
teams.
I knew they were having a party.
Oh, it was a celebratory
joking
last,
and
how
they
many
were
miles?
Laughing.
Six miles, I think. It was just a celebration. It was fantastic.
Yeah.
We were catching people, and I think there were two boys who was glad when we had passed because we were laughing, we were joking, and one of them was singing, you know, it was just like the whole thing was just, you know, so much fun.
Yeah.
But even for like Nancy, she's not a runner or a long walker, but she obviously could keep up with the pace at that point, and she just enjoyed it so much as well, just to be part of that. And then I remember coming up that last steep hill and looking down onto Fort William, and I said to Katrina, it was 5:30, I said, do you think I can make 6 o'clock? And she said, don't even try, you know, just enjoy, because I wouldn't have made it. I mean, 25 minutes, I think I wouldn't have got there, but in the end I took an hour. But that was such good advice, because I thought, well, why suddenly, you know, putting you under so much stress just to get half an hour less, you know, on that time, when you can actually enjoy the last couple of miles. And then it was just after 6 we reached, you know, the caravan park just above, and I knew it was Andreas who was doing the race for the first time. It was his birthday, and he had just completed his last Monroe on the day, and I phoned him up at 6 o'clock in the morning, and we all sang happy birthday to him, and he actually then came out of his bed and joined us also for the last bit. So the whole, it was a bit like a party maybe, but they all left me after the roundabout, so they went ahead. So I could actually run the last few, I don't know, 100 meters, and just to obviously focus and just, you know, come. And then Debbie, Marco and Sharon came, and that opened the floodgates when they came towards me. And yeah, I think everybody was in tears.
Yeah, well, you finished in 29 hours, 34 minutes and 51 seconds.
Uh-huh.
And I was at the finish, obviously I was on the race control last year, and I had a tear in my eye. Because I knew how much you'd put into it. And I think just recently you posted that video that you, of the finish.
Yes. Oh,
and that just brought it all back again, you know, seeing you coming in and the hugs you were giving everybody. And there was just that real sense of you've accomplished something that you thought just a few years ago was impossible.
Yeah.
And I think that's what the race is about, isn't it? You know, it's whether you finish like Terry Conway in 15 hours, 37, 9, whatever it was, or you finish in 34 hours or whatever it is. It's the fact that you've accomplished that distance, and I think you're a great example of that.
And I think that's what it is, really. I mean, obviously I know a bit about the front runners because of Thomas, but otherwise I think you're really in your own, you know, you're doing your race and you're maybe middle or backpack of the field, but, you know, the front, what's happening on the front doesn't really get into your head so much. You know, you're doing the race for your own reasons, and that's your accomplishment, and that's, you know, what counts in the end, you know. But obviously at the end, the prize giving, the good thing is, you know, everybody appreciates each other's achievement. You know, even the first runner, you know, appreciates what you've done and vice versa. But, you know, on the day, it's really your race and your accomplishment and your team's, I think. That's
and that
important.
Moment when you went up and got your goblet, how did that feel?
I actually look as if I walk quite looked at it again, and it felt fantastic.
Yeah. Made it all worth it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think you're with a group of, there's 200, 300, or 400 people in that room, and every one of them knows what you've done to get there. And that's why I think when you got your first one, you know, there's that real sense of, we know how much you've struggled for this.
Oh yeah, I got applause, you know.
Yeah. So that was great. Mm. Well, look, I think we'll just pause there.
Yes,
I think tea's ready, and so we'll have a little break, and then we'll come back and we'll finish off, because I've got a few more questions I'd like to ask as well, and maybe some advice that you can give to other support teams and runners that are getting ready for this year's race. But thanks so far.
Pleasure.
Welcome back. We've had our food, and Katrina has truly given us a lovely meal, a nice spread. Did you enjoy that today?
It was fantastic.
Fantastic.
Thanks,
we will
Katrina.
Come every month now for an interview. As long as there's food provided, yeah, no, it was delicious.
Okay, so where we left it, you had a very emotional finish, and you got your goblet, and mission accomplished. So I just wanted to ask maybe a few questions about how you can maybe help runners this year. So the race is just 3 weeks on, is that right? 3 weeks on Saturday?
Next Saturday.
Yeah, 3 weeks on Saturday. So by the time this goes out in the next day or two, it'll be even closer. So what advice would you give, both in the sense of how much running people should do between now and the race, but maybe more importantly, what key things do you think runners and support folks need to work on to get themselves ready for the race?
Well, maybe leave the running part to Thomas, I think really just to, in your mind, really just imagine the finish and imagine maybe the last few miles and imagine getting the goblet and just having that sort of mental picture in your head as well, which I think can help you when it maybe gets tough, and just really dreaming about, you know, how you would see yourself, you know, to finish it, and how you might feel and how it might be when you get up there to collect your goblet. And I think just really having that sort of mental image in your head and maybe keep it there for when it gets really tough, I think that's probably a good idea, because I remember on my last few shorter runs to just trying to imagine, you know, how it would be if that was maybe the last mile towards the finish, and just trying to picture that, I think.
Yeah.
And with regards to the support crew, maybe really obviously organizing a meeting and trying to work out a schedule and trying to work out what you need from meeting point to meeting point, and shedding all the unnecessary bits in your backpack and working out how much fluid and how much food you really need to carry, and just getting a detailed plan in and trying to stick to that, so that you really don't have to think about all those things on race day, and your crew doesn't have to think about that.
Great, thank you. And Thomas, remember we talked a bit earlier about that first race you did, that the week before you didn't sleep too well. I remember you describing your stomach was like in a washing machine, remember?
Yes.
You had that one. What advice would you give for someone who was maybe like you, prepared really well, trained hard, and yet, you know, really struggled in that week before the race because it almost became too big?
I don't know. I think for me, that just had to happen. It was wrong. It didn't go well. I can't really say how to actually avoid this. I just got really too obsessed almost with that race, and I thought that was a good thing, you know, if I mentally completely prepare myself for this race well, but I would not recommend anyone to do the same, obviously, but I can't say how to avoid it. I'm just take it easy, look forward to the race, and on race day really try, best advice you can give anyone is just try to enjoy it. I think one of my problems was I overtrained, so I just tried to get to run as many miles as possible. Mm. And that just is a mistake, because even an average runner or a beginner can run much more miles just by, you know, force feeding miles into your schedule. But it's you need to find out what training you can actually recover from, what training actually brings you forward rather than just running loads and loads and loads and loads of miles.
Yeah,
that was my mistake.
But maybe even now, I mean, obviously it's only 3 weeks to go then to say, oh, from one point, okay, this was my last long run and now I'm tapering off, and then just really saying to yourself, well, actually I have done all the training I could have, and trying to relax from that point.
I did.
Telling yourself that you have done everything you can, there's no point now to do anything else, and you just now have to get to the start healthy. I mean, just trying to avoid catching anything else that could get in the way, any colds or whatever else that could hamper your race. So.
But I mean, sometimes even the DNF for me wasn't really a terrible experience. I had two DNFs, and afterwards I learned from my failures and my mistakes and try to train a bit more carefully. Just, you need to learn yourself, you need to learn, you know, what you can actually do and what you shouldn't be doing. You learn what you can eat and what you can't eat. It took a few years for me just to find out what training is best for me, and I started obviously training too much and too hard, and it just takes a few years, I think, for a runner to be able to run 100 mile weeks, you know, if that's required anyway. You can have a good race on 70 miles a week, for example, a fast race or a good race or an enjoyable race on 70 miles. But if you can run well and you digest a high mileage, then I think it's a good thing. You need to figure that out for yourself.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. Well, we've got some final questions, some from Facebook, and then I'd like to do my quick fire questions. But these are ones on the websites, on Facebook. Jude asks, when is Silke going to set the inline skating record for the West Highland Way?
When they tarmac it from beginning to finish.
But
which hopefully they won't. I mean, I'm against that, just for the record.
For those who don't know, Zilke, you've done that. You've done the inland skating marathon,
yes,
haven't you?
Marathon, yes.
And what's your best time?
1:38, I think.
Wow,
got another 1:40. Yes,
that's some speed, isn't it?
Yeah, it was good.
And that must be a very different experience to running, is it?
Well, it was. I mean, last year I did it after the Silent Way race, and I remember trying to keep up with my pace group because I wanted to get under 1:40, and I had joined that pace group, and they it was really difficult. And halfway I thought, God, this is even more intense and this is more difficult than the West Highland Way. Come on, you know, you've done 95 miles, you know, you can do it. But the concentration and the pressure and that was, at that time I thought it was harder than actually running the West Highland Way race. Different, totally different.
Yeah, different type of pain pressure. Norman asks, during your West Highland Way race, were there any low points where you felt like calling it a day? If so, what got you going again apart from Thomas? You've answered some of this, but...
Yes, I don't think I had ever a point where I said, you know, I couldn't or wouldn't go on. But maybe the Larwick Moor, where it became a bit more painful and more difficult, that was maybe a low point. But, I mean, none of it would have stopped me, I think,
I didn't have to, I didn't motivate her at all. She was completely self-motivated. There was no point in the race where she said, oh, I want to stop. Absolutely not.
And that's what really impressed me, Zilke, as well, just seeing the way you prepared, the way you got through the day, was that you, even though the conditions were tough, you were dealing with it and you were going to get that goblet, you know. And I think what you said earlier about being mentally prepared for it, that it wasn't even in your vocabulary to stop, was it? You were going to finish.
No, I mean, though I would say, I mean, I even maybe when we met before, you maybe felt I was a bit more pessimistic before. You always felt maybe I was a bit sort of careful in maybe predicting what my race would be like. But I think, I mean, yes, I knew I was ready and I was fit and I would do anything to get to the finish, but I mean, deep down, I also knew that if anything happened, like an accident, or there could still be something that could stop me from getting it. But, you know, unless an accident or something, you know, I knew I would get there. But I would always say that, you know, there is always obviously that remote possibility that you know,
yeah,
something
that's
can happen.
That's,
you know,
out of your control, isn't
it? Well, in a way, yes.
I think there's two reasons people stop. One is because they're injured or there's external factors.
Yeah.
But the other reason is people just having enough,
yeah.
you know, and deciding to stop. And I think I got the impression that if it was up to you,
yeah.
then you
on
were
the,
gonna
yes,
keep going
to
keep going.
Yes, that's right. And on the, yeah. yeah, on the day, yes, you know, it was up to me and there was nothing that obviously could stop, you know, that had, you know, that prevented me from going on. Yes, I would, you know, I would go on. Yeah, definitely. Mm.
Okay, next question is from Marco. What's harder, supporting the diva Thomas when he did the West Harlem Way in beautiful, calm conditions, or running it yourself in some of the worst conditions ever?
Well, I think definitely the support is harder. I mean, that there's just, I think, maybe because I have obviously experienced two DNFs with Thomas, and that is really hard to as a support as well, to get through and support your runner through the DNF. But I think I'm, from the minute the race starts, when I support Thomas, I'm on edge. I mean, I'm on edge until he gets to the finish. And even if he's only 200 yards from the finish, I know some things can still go wrong. You know, so there's always that possibility. And I've got my phone next to my ear just in case he phones. And I mean, that is just...
It's easier running.
It's easier running. You just run, you concentrate, you can even enjoy the running. But I think it's that worry about your runner, you know, that is he all right? Has something happened, or you know, is he phoning because something isn't quite right? So I definitely think, you know, it's harder to support.
Okay, and then this is from your friend Fiona. She says, "How did they manage to talk me into doing the Devil of the Highlands, my first ultra?" And she says, "They are fab."
I think it's actually quite funny because I don't think you can persuade anyone to run an ultra. I think it sort of grows on you, and I mean, look at Katrina. I think she just, you know, I remember taking her out for her first trail run from Benglass, and suddenly she was hooked, and she's now obviously running away from me, and she just loves it. And I think it's that sort of seeing somebody else maybe running on the trails, or seeing somebody else doing an ultra, and you think, what actually, what is the fuss about it? And I just wonder, you know, maybe I could try. So I think it's that slowly growing into it and thinking, I wish, you know, I'll just see if I can do it myself. And I think that's what happened to Fiona. Just thinking, well, I just wonder, you know, what are they talking about?
In your club as well, didn't you win an award last year?
Oh, yes, that's right. That's right. I got the Achievement Award, yes, for finishing.
Well deserved.
For finishing, so yeah.
But again, it's something like that, isn't it? Someone in your club who maybe never thought of doing an ultra sees you doing it and saying, wow, it is possible.
Yeah, or even you support someone, you know, like Katrina. I mean, she never even used to run when I first met her. Then suddenly she runs, or, you know, I never thought of running the West Highland Way during the first 2 years, and then you just think, maybe.
Yeah. Good, well, I'm sure you'll inspire lots of people. And then Ian Wallace asks, would you like to run the race again, or was last year a one-off?
Difficult question. At the moment it was a one-off, but I might not maybe want to do it, but at the moment I'm very short of time, but and there's also a lot of other races I might want to try, and especially the one in Chamonix. I had entered or tried to get an entry for the CCC, but I didn't get in, so there's maybe one or two other things I might want to do. And for me, it really was a challenge just to see if I could finish. And it's not about, I think, improving my time or trying to get under 28 hours. I don't think that, you know, would give me anything. Or so at the moment, I think it's maybe a one-off, and maybe looking at other things that I could try out.
But it's not put you off running off.
It's not put me off at all. No. But I'm not chasing time. So at the moment, I think I had despite the weather, I had a really good race. And I want to keep it at that at the moment, I think.
Excellent. Well, okay, so we've got these quick fire questions, and it'd be quite helpful to get both of your ideas on this. So I don't know whether you want to take turns or alternate two answers, but okay. So shoes, road or trail?
Trail for me.
Road.
Okay. Food. What favourite food do you go to keep you going when you start to slow and struggle?
Gels.
Gels.
I would say probably jelly babies.
Right. Okay. Do you carry a hydration pack or a water bottle?
Pack for me, definitely.
This is quite interesting. Do you take water or energy drinks?
Water.
Well, water with electrolyte in it.
Yeah, but no energy drinks.
No energy drinks, yeah, that's true.
Okay. Are you a fan of Coke?
Coke, yes.
I would probably try Coke later, but I've never done it, but I think I would probably try it.
I have tried it for the
fat,
last...
Fat, flat Coke.
Yeah.
And you like your coffees?
I like my coffees.
Yeah.
salt tablets?
No.
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 Well, we use noon tablets,
yes,
which are essentially salt tablets.
Okay.
Well,
but they are kind of mild.
Yeah, but they're not the ones. What do we call them? The ones that
not the succeed ones.
Succeed ones.
No.
Yeah, that's the one.
Okay.
I'm not saying they are bad, but we don't use them.
Okay. Do you run with a watch, a Garmin, or do you like to run with no timepiece?
Garmin.
Well, Thomas gave me a Garmin as a present, so I'm running with a Garmin.
But you're quite happy with that?
I often run, I mean, if I go out at home and I know the distance, I definitely run without a watch.
But Thomas, you like to time everything.
I like my Garmin, yeah.
Support crew, do you have one or two teams?
Well, I had two teams because I needed both nights, yes.
One team.
Because you're so fast, you only need one. have you got a favourite section of the race?
Well, the second part from Tyndrum, and I would say probably... from the staircase up towards Kinloch Leven and then Rannoch Moor, Larrigmoor.
Yeah, mine is certainly the Larrigmoor is my favourite.
Okay, and do you listen to music, books, or do you not carry anything to listen to?
No, nothing.
No music.
Okay, have you got a favourite mantra that you use to keep yourself motivated to keep going?
Not one. I mean, it should... depends on in the Versailles race, obviously my mantra was now or never. but you know, that can change on the day or in the race.
My mantra is similar to yours, although I'm using kind of the opposite. My mantra is like running light, fast, steady, float, you know, it's kind of easy but fast. That's my mantra. Easy and fast.
Okay. What thing do you look forward to most once you've finished?
The chair.
To sit down.
Sitting down for the first time is.
Probably. Definitely.
Just sitting down. And
I think
same
probably
view.
Yes. I mean, I haven't actually thought about
stopping running and
knowing that you're there and just stopping.
Okay, and what final tip would you like to give to other runners?
Really enjoy the race. Whatever you do, whatever your plan is, your strategy, whatever, but try to enjoy it. So. And I think Marcus said it in the last race podcast, what Scott Bradley told him, if you're not enjoying it, you're going too fast, or something goes wrong, and make sure you are comfortable.
I think just enjoy being out there and enjoy the scenery and taking it all in. I think that keeps me going. I don't use music or anything, but just looking around, you know, listening to maybe birds chirping or... you know, taking in the surroundings. I remember seeing the boats on Loch Lomond during the race last year and thinking, oh, I wonder what they are doing, you know, waiting for someone to fall in, and just really, you know, taking it in and sort of going along. Maybe saying this year I hope you all look after yourselves and make sure you arrive healthy and in a good condition at the finish. If you don't, I'll be there.
I was just going to point to that because neither of you are running this year.
Thomas
unfortunately is injured, so he's not in. But you're both going to be involved in the race. So do you want to tell us just finally what role you've got this year?
Well, I'll be the medical cover at the finish, as Sean is away. So I'll be there waiting for you all, and hope not many will of you will need my assistance, but if you do, I'm there, and I'm looking forward to it, to just really seeing the race from a totally different perspective again.
So you'll be there from the whole...
Well, the first finisher coming in until
the
last one.
Finish, right.
And even, as Sean told me, be ready at the prize giving in case somebody wants to faint there and
right.
decides to have a problem there. So I'll be there, yeah.
Well, thank you very much for that. We appreciate that. And Thomas, what are you doing?
I'll be supporting Marco
right.
In his hopefully best West Highlander race attempt yet.
Okay.
So he's in good shape, and I'm really looking forward to support.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you both very much for coming tonight and for sharing this with us. And I hope you enjoy the race this year in your different roles. And I hope we see you back, Thomas, running
yes.
again strongly
right.
soon.
Hopefully.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, thanks for
asking.
Thanks
for having us.
Pleasure.
Good luck with your races.
Thank you.
Yeah, good luck, everyone.
I hope you've enjoyed episode 43 of the West Highland Way Race podcast. There was a lot of really good stuff there from Thomas and Silke, and I hope you found that helpful as you prepare for this year's race. Next week I'm interviewing Ian Minty, and hopefully also catch up with David McClure as well and get a feel of how they're going. We've been following their progress over the last few months, and so it'll be interesting to hear how they're feeling with the race just a few weeks away. So thanks again for listening, and I hope that if you're running the race this year, then you're tapering well and you are feeling good and lots of positive vibes about the whole experience. It's going to be great to get on that start line in a few weeks' time and enjoy this amazing race together. So thanks again for listening, and remember, slow and steady wins the race.